Hello, and thanks for joining us here on Leading Edge. I'm Jeff Smith. That shooting in December of last year at the Franklin Park Mall left two injured and nerves rattled, so much so. Social media was flooded with comments about the mall. Would people stay away? Is it a failed concept? Well, not so fast, says one of the driving forces behind the creation and marketing of Franklin Park Mall back in the 70s. Stan Eichelbaum, he lives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida now, but he has great affection for Franklin Park. Today, we've got a bit of a walk down memory lane, and we have to give a shout out to a local author, Chris Bors, for his book, The Franklin Park Mall, A History. It's available right now on Amazon. I started my conversation with Stan, asking him where he sees the indoor mall concept for towns like Toledo, and he says it's a challenging period.
I think the main thing to understand in Toledo is that Franklin Park is not the normal history of the malls. It's a unique situation. Malls, through its history, have been great opportunists, in many cases, visionaries of limited vision on it. In the case of Franklin Park, it was came under the Rouse Company and an incredible social visionary, Jim Rouse. We were building the city of Columbia, Maryland, now called the best place to live in America by many studies at that time. And we were spreading malls across the country of great uniqueness. We were leading edge architecture driven by Jim's vision. We were not a commodity vehicle of rented space. We were an orchestration. And Jim never used the term mall, didn't like it. Except for he did put it on the name of a few projects. He liked Village Square. He saw it along with other people, and the architect of the first malls in the country, Victor Gruen, who is idolized in the field of architecture, came out after couple of decades of malls and said, these were not meant to just be retail if they were really to have long-term vitality. They had to be specific orchestrations of life all the way around.
Where did it go wrong then?
Well, again, the proliferation of space, once the concept was successful of an orchestration of stores, became a more simplistic build everything for rental. And at one point, I was quoted in national media in, I believe, 1990, saying that there was enough mall space to service a population of over 700 million. Unfortunately, America only had 280 million at that point on it. But a lot of the later product was bricks and mortar with nameplates of stores, not a gathering place. I took the opportunity just to show what Franklin Park was originally. Franklin Park hosted the first exhibit of Norman Rockwell art outside of the collection while I was there. It held,
and that was meant to draw people in. It was meant to make people come in and buy art. What was the purpose?
It was meant to make it a vital place, residually attracting customers. It was to make it a. There was a or concert series, and you,
Johnny Nora, I'm very familiar. Yes.
Yep, we actually did recordings of his concerts, and he was the local maven of music all the way around. The mall was not just bricks and mortar. It featured the second largest sculpture ever by Calder, a world-renowned artist. It included a lot of other features. The architecture was absolutely the most beautiful mall in the country on opening day and has endured very, very well. So it started with those roots throughout the Rouse Company era into Westfield, which is a very prominent developer from Australia, who had a great vision of it. So that mall has better bones than most malls. It was very hard to challenge it, although Southwick did for a short time on it, but it came back very hard. We were able to bring J.L. Hudson to Toledo, Ohio for the first time out of the state of Michigan. And we were very careful to articulate a message of locality with Lambston's department store back then. So it was a great cross-section. When you looked at the retailers, It wasn't the general all fashion. We had the leading stereo shop of the region. We had a ice cream parlor, Farrell's, from the West Coast. It was just, they had never done anything in the Midwest. And they were a celebration point that was at the talk of the country.
So these were things that were unique to the Toledo market, obviously, being a small mid-sized market at one time. And Stan, you know this as well, Toledo was thought of as one of the best test markets in the country when it came to franchises. Is that not correct?
Yep. Well, many Ohio cities are sort of a crossroads for American appetite.
Absolutely. So I guess, do cities like Toledo need the mall concept?
They don't necessarily need the mall concept, but I do not consider the mall concept dead. It will come back. It has shrugged an incredible amount of space, the number of malls that have closed. And those were redundancies that were never really necessary. Somebody will come back very creative. One of the problems is it has gone from the originators, the Ed DeBartlow from Youngstown, the Mel Simons from Indianapolis, Ernie Hahn from California, and Jim Rouse, who were holistic in their perspective and definitely thought of the Village Green and the integrated in as a focal point of the community, to equity interest that saw the repetition of just creating a lot of mall space. So
What about these outdoor concepts, though? You see a lot more of those these days. I don't know if there are those that you're working on in Fort Lauderdale, but is the inside mall dead?
The inside mall is not dead, but it was never as necessary as envisioned. We, as a planning organization, tried to convince American developers who were cranking out malls at such high speed in the early 2000s about the potential for lifestyle centers. We actually did them in Dubai with 110-degree nights before we could convince American developers to do it. The customer in Chicago, Oak Brook, in terrible weather, has been vital as an outdoor shopping center for probably 75 years now. So people can tolerate their habitation all the way around. And there's a lot of environmental desire to being outdoors in the right climate and the right aesthetic. So those malls, but they're also a cycle that malls in stage one were very vital. When they went to stage two, they started to go down in overall volume in stage three. And the same thing is happening within the lifestyle center. The hard part is keeping it in right scale so that it is what is termed a regional attraction all the way around rather than overbuilding.
Is the landscape that we see even now, I mean, there are open gaps. There are vacancies. And obviously we've lost three of the bellwethers as far as malls that are in this area. And the one that exists right now out in Maumee is not full.
Again, back to that envisionment that we had over double the space necessary, even back in 1990, America, by some studies, came out to over 40 square feet of retail per capita in the early 2000s. The next country, I believe, was England, if I remember right, at 11.2. That shows the dramatic overbuilding that went on in America. On the other side of it, America has been for decades the best place in the world to be a consumer because of the tenacious competition. But were we overbuilt? Hugely and repetitiously. You had a limited store on every corner, it seemed like.
Stay right there. We continue our conversation right after this. Welcome back. Glad to have you with us. Now here on Leading Edge, our conversation turns to people. I asked Stan about how much the mall concept was built on creating and maintaining a social experience, especially post-pandemic.
It's a critically important in our perspective as a company, in my perspective of having worked on communities around the world. We've been fortunate to work in 49 countries. And it's an important part of socialization, so much so that the leader of a Middle Eastern country during a terrorist period came out and wanted to fund academics towards shopping places because he saw them as critical to socialization. It sounded pretty quirky at the time, but you think about it, it creates aspiration in people. It creates contact, which is being lost, obviously, with social media and other dynamics of our society right now. The retail element, conceived right, so that it has economic vitality, connectivity in enjoyment, connectivity in activity for people, is a important part of the urban landscape all the way around. We need all cities to look at the economic hub, and economic hub isn't a good term. It ought to be, again, the village crosswalk, where government, medical, athletics, and everything come together. How many mall walkers do you have in America? That's probably the biggest club in the world on it. And they're an important part of the whole thing. You know, years ago, I was in a meeting in another Ohio city, and somebody left the meeting. It was in a area that was being gentrified, and we were discussing the crime issue. And a person came back in a few minutes later and got robbed and said, "We need a policeman on every corner." No, we need people on every corner. I'm not shrugging the need for police, but the more people on the street, the more people confident, the more people enjoying it, the healthier urban areas can be. That is the strength of everything.
For a downtown area like Toledo, they've talked a lot about residential. They're trying to have this rebirth, this renaissance. How much does retail need to play into that?
You can't create, and cities have learned it, the density of residential without servicing it. And you want to, again, draw people to the streetscape. You want to create the safety all the way around. And yes, policing is very important, but having people use the street, that is what, nobody goes into a huge crowd and robs somebody on a corner or anything else on it. That is the deterrence that's maximum all the way around. It's also the friendliness fiber. You know, years ago, I was in Dubrovnik, and it's a wonderful walled city. And the houses have a, most people serve dinner at the top for tourists with great European heavy wines and heavy food and everything. And then you come down at 7 o'clock, and on the main promenade in walled city, people come out and walk the streets saying hello to each other. It sounds corny at first, but it is absolutely one of those beautiful experiences you can imagine. But you have to have desirable, user-friendly terrain. And stores are part of that. And it's not just stores. It's museums. It is doctor's offices. It's everything else articulated in the right way.
Finally, is the ease, the frequency of online shopping, is that, I guess, something that will bring malls to their knees, or will it just be an added element out there?
The mall has persevered through generations of aggression towards it. It was discounters. It was catalog stores. It was catalogs in the mail. Certainly, internet is the strongest of aggressions we've seen. But again, we had too much commoditization space, and that is faltering very strongly. The progressive developers who can put together the environment of desirability of use will persevere and bring it back. And hopefully, I don't know, it's a challenge we're going to see play out over the next several years. Hopefully, we can do what's healthy for society, healthy for the economics and livability of cities. But I think we're going to see a new generation of pioneers versus just an equity mentality of a build out and lease up the space. We're going to find places that have more invigoration of entertainment, cohesive to the merchandising, dining, and everything else. And some interesting things. We've worked on projects now around the world where we've put a 140,000 square foot medical center on top of a shopping center and found it very compatible with over 140 of the country's best specialists. We put a university above a college, which created a terrific theaterplex and a restaurant avenue throughout the facility. So we're learning it's not just basic retail. That's where it falters, and it was done too often. It's how do you integrate the right things into the package to create the whole for society, not just the run out and convenience purchase. And that will exist too.
I was going to say, I know your expertise does not come free, but if you had to give the powers that be, Franklin Park Mall, Fallen Timbers out in Maumee, if you had to give them a path for the next 20 years for success, you would say what?
First of all, I don't believe in the I think mentality. There's so much research. Do what the research says. Research has come so far. Artificial intelligence will be a big part of this industry. We're going to understand the customers so much more. There's been so much technology is fantastic, but a lot of it's a waste of money. It doesn't really invigorate. Get to the things that really invigorate all the way around. And patience and intense management. That was the difference of the Rouse Company from a lot of others. This is a very intense product. You've got to have your advertising out. You've got to have the safety you talked about. You've got to have the entertainment. And you have to have a blend of stores, not overdo it in any area because it's unfair to the retailer and it doesn't help draw the customer.
Coming up, the organization that gets families through a rough patch right after this. Welcome back. Big thanks to Stan Eichelbaum for joining us once again via his home down there in Fort Lauderdale. It's the house that love built, but it takes a lot of love and support, a lot of support to keep it going each and every year. Joining me now is Chad Bringman, the president of Ronald McDonald House Charities of Northwest Ohio. Good to see you again, my
Good
friend.
To see you.
Thanks for being here. You took me on a tour recently of the house itself, and I just want to talk a little bit. There's a big event coming up. I want to make that secondary to the conversation about how far you guys have come in such, relatively short period of time serving these families who need it the most.
Yep. As you pointed out, the tour the other day, just kind of, it's always great for me to be able to show folks around and show them what Toledo built for us, but, you know, prior to that, we were in
pride in it.
A lot of pride in it, including the former house. You know, we had an 8,000 square foot house that had 14 rooms. We served hundreds of people through that as well. A little more than 8 years ago now, we built the new house, which is 38,000 square feet, 14 additional families, or 28 total. Just a lot of good common space. But we're thankful that Toledo's given us that gift for sure.
Yeah.
And families that are, like you said, going through some of the worst times of their life. They've got a sick little one. They're traveling all the way to Toledo and from wherever they're coming from, and they don't have to worry about where am I going to stay, what am I going to eat, you know, that's all taken care of.
Some of the things that really stood out, some of the eating areas, the dining, professional kitchen you have, cubbies specifically for the family, all of these things just kind of outfitted for this, like you said, a rough patch for these families.
That's right. They're going through some of the toughest days of their life for sure. And the first thing you think about is where we're going to stay. But normally what we hear from our families, it's hour 10 or 12 or 14 since they've been in the hospital that they kind of come to that realization. So we like to just make sure they don't have to think about anything but that child getting better. In a lot of cases, they may have come to us with the clothes on their back and they're with us for days and weeks at a time sometimes. So we just want to take that stress away and allow them to focus on one thing and that their kid is getting healthier and stronger.
Are they kind of taken aback, I guess, at times for what is made available to them? Common areas, you've got playrooms set up. I mean, and obviously what's being afforded to them there in their rooms as well, the care that they're getting.
Yeah, 100%. Families come all the time and, you know, they're like most of us, right? We've heard of this place called the Ronald McDonald House. We know a little bit about it, but when they show up, when they need it, they're kind of blown away by what's available to them, and it's all free of charge. And the only reason it's free of charge is our only funding source is donations from the community. So certainly things like our event coming up or people that round up at McDonald's or buy Shamrock Shakes right now, those types of things make a big difference.
And let's plug away at the event that's
Sounds
coming up,
good.
The heartwarming party that is coming up on the 23rd. You guys, I mean, a laundry list of things that are available. Tacos and tequila, 12-person private party available, Northwest Ohio Family Fun, just so many things and so many great donations, donors, individuals who have made this happen again this year.
It's a beautiful community. I say that all the time. We get blown away by how much support we get. And Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan is really a very philanthropic group of people. They step up. They help people when they're in need. This is a mission that people identify with. So, yeah, when we have events like this, people really do come out of the woodwork, literally, to make sure that we have things that we need. Alan Miller
the theme
Jewelers.
This year.
Jeans to Jewels is our go-to, right? We want people to be casual on a Friday night. Alan Miller Jewelers is one of our top sponsors, and he donated 10-carat diamond ring that's going to be auctioned off. Somebody's going home with that thing. It's unbelievable. It's a fun night.
And reservations, you have to make them still available?
I would get on it. We still have some tickets, but if I was out there and I'm watching this, I would get on
it. Yeah, let's put up the full screen once again. That is the heartwarming party that comes up on Friday, February 23rd, Hilton Garden Inn in downtown Toledo. And more information at rmhctoledo.org.
That's us.
Chad, good to see you as always.
Good to see you. Thank you
so much. We'll be right back. Well, for a final time this week, thank you so much. Once again, this show wouldn't be nearly what it is without you out there. If you missed any part of our conversations, you can find us on our YouTube page, WTOL 11. Have a great rest of your weekend. I'm Jeff Smith. We'll see you next time.